And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. There's a quote that I read from a famous doctor, and he says, the body does not gravitate toward disease. It gravitates toward health. Now, what if that was your mindset? You know, playing on what we talked about last week, I want to try to hit the ground running on that. And one of the ideas that I try to always have right in front of me at the forefront, and I try to keep this right there because it's just what you have to think about when you have a person in front of you that is not enjoying great health. You got to remember, always support the tissues involved in the disease process. And so let me give you an example. If somebody walks in the door and they say, okay, my vision is not near as good as it used to be, there's been a tremendous drop-off, and I have high blood pressure and kidney problems. Well, one of the things that you have to think of is you've got to start thinking about the circulation of the body. Between the eyes and the kidneys, these are tissues that just require an incredible amount of oxygen. I don't really remember the stats, but if you look at the organ systems in the body that utilize them or have the highest need for oxygen, oh, the eyes and the kidneys, they're just right up there. I'd probably say the brain too, probably the heart. And so one of the aspects of health is, you know how in the book of Leviticus in the Old Testament it talks about the life is in the blood? Well, I keep thinking to myself and saying over and over again that, hey, Roy, you really don't understand how complex this sophistication is called the blood. But I think the more that I'm willing to take a look at it, yes, you are fearfully and wonderfully made. You are actually the most sophisticated, complex, detailed creation that's in the universe. You really are. And it's easy for us to take for granted the human body because it's just amazing in how it functions. Well, we always think about how do we deliver oxygen to the tissues of the body? And you think, okay, the heart has got to do its job. It's got to, the lower chamber, the ventricles, they have to contract. And that takes oxygen-rich blood that is fresh from the lungs. You know, you're breathing. And so it pumps it to the brain. And so the requirement of the brain is, as well as every other cell, they have two things they need. They want food. Well, they want water too. That goes without saying. You're made of water. But they want oxygen. Oxygen, oxygen, oxygen. But quite often, even though it's very common to study the coronary arteries. So if one of those coronary blood vessels is clogged up, a doctor may do a procedure where he does a dye job and he goes, yep, your posterior circumferential artery is 95% clogged up. We're going to need to put a stent in there. And the stent is designed to be a spring-loaded wire mesh titanium drug-coated device that opens up the blood flow, whereas the blood flow was very restricted before. But the point is, you're supposed to get more oxygen. You know what a heart attack is, don't you? A heart attack is when you have a big Charlie horse of the heart. If you want to get a Charlie horse or a severe cramp in your foot or your calf or leg or thigh, guess what you have to do? Just decrease the oxygen. It will cramp. And so essentially, that's what a heart attack is. If you can't deliver enough oxygen to the heart itself, it's going to seize up. It's going to spasm. Now, that's not good. But what I really want to think about this morning is, I want to think about the teeniest, tiniest vessels where all the oxygen transfer takes place. That's called the capillaries. So if you want to call them the capillary bed, if you want to call them those teeniest, tiniest of arteries or arterioles called capillaries, we'll call them that. But that's where all this takes place. Just nearly 100% of all your nourishment to these tissues, whatever tissues they are, maybe it's the frontal lobe of your brain, Maybe it's your right adrenal gland that needs more blood flow and oxygen and nourishment. Maybe it's the kidney. If you're a man, maybe it's the prostate or something else. Maybe your feet need more blood flow. If you take your bare foot and you place it on your husband's bare back in the middle of the night and he screams, you might have a little bit too low blood flow, causing your feet to be ice cold. Everything in the body is going to be controlled by the blood. It really is. And it depends on you being able to get the blood to those tissues. And so it used to be thought of for the longest period of time that one of the hallmarks of adult onset type 2 diabetes was it caused reduced blood flow. Well, yeah, it's true. It's been proven. When you have diabetes, whether it's type 1 or type 2, you're going to struggle a lot more with getting oxygen and nutrients to the cells. But now some of the latest research is starting to turn all this around. It's starting to look more like it's actually poor blood flow in the body that leads to the development of insulin resistance. And of course, let me just review, and I'll make this very brief from last week. When you have a very young liver, the capillary bed itself that feeds and gives nourishment and oxygen and nutrients to the liver cell itself, well, the vascular bed or the capillary bed, it's almost as if somebody has poked small holes in all the capillaries. But what that does is, even though that looks unusual under a microscope, doesn't look like anything else, it almost looks like a sieve. Could you imagine if you took some spaghetti, you cooked it in boiling water? But what do? You drain the water off of it, the boiling water. So you put it in a colander or something that's like a mesh wire where the water can drain out and it preserves the spaghetti noodles so you can make chicken spaghetti, right? Well, that's kind of like the capillaries are in the liver. And when this takes place, and this is God's design, it's got to be. When this occurs, you get this effortless oxygen transfer throughout the liver. And you know what really happens here? If you can deliver the liver's requirement for oxygen nutrition, it can do anything that you ask it to do. It can keep your cholesterol levels lower. It can detoxify a drug that maybe you've taken because of an injury and you're in pain, so you take ibuprofen or aspirin or Tylenol. Well, the liver's job is to remove that so it won't cause toxicity or it won't allow your tissues to be poisoned by the Tylenol. So the moment you take a drug like Tylenol, your liver goes to work at trying to remove it and break it down. That's called detoxification. So when the liver's very young, the capillaries, they have these teeny tiny holes in there. But that's what allows oxygen without any effort at all to pass in and out of those holes so it can feed and nourish the liver. So what do you have? And this is like a real world analogy, but I'm going to use I'm going to say that I have a friend that I went to high school with, and he's a veterinarian now, but he was telling me not that long ago that a lady had brought in a small puppy. Well, not a small puppy, but probably 20 pounds. Well, I guess that's small. But at 20 pounds, it had been hit on the highway by a car, and she couldn't stand to see the dog suffer, so she brought him to the doctor, the veterinarian, and he administered a dose of a medication. I can't remember if he said it was phenobarbital or something like that. But basically, he's just trying to mercifully put the dog down so it can not suffer anymore. And he told me before he even removed the needle, he had his stethoscope on the dog's heart. And he could hear before the needle was even withdrawn after he injected it, the heartbeat stopped. But my point is, a puppy has brand new blood flow, new capillaries, great circulation. Now what he did was he countered it with that a woman had brought a beagle in. And I want to say the beagle was maybe 13 years old, and I don't know the history, but it's just the way it is in this world. There's going to be disease, there's going to be suffering, there's injuries, there's accidents, but I think the owner of the Beagle, was left with no other option but to put the dog down with great mercy and compassion. And so my veterinarian friend was telling me that he administered the same dose of the drug that he had given the puppy to, stop its pain and suffering, stopping the heart, and he administered the same dose to the old Beagle. Well, I thought it was interesting, and I don't know that, he really caught on this, but it's interesting to hear what another person says, but he says he listened to the heartbeat for 4 minutes before it stopped. But what's the point that I want you to get from this? As you get older, the circulation is not as good as when you were very young, and that's what I want you to hone in on this morning. I want you to think in terms of almost every single disease process that you could name. It's going to have poor microcirculation at the core of it. And if we don't address that, you can try endless amounts of remedies, and you may not get the results you want unless you can do something that improves the amount of oxygen and blood flow and nutrient that you can actually deliver, to the cells or the tissues that are diseased. Does that make sense? And so what's one of the factors? I think I covered it briefly last week. I mentioned they did one study where a person was just in close proximity to a person that over 10 minutes they smoked 2 cigarettes. So if you got the secondhand smoke, it showed that it decreased in the person that wasn't even smoking. They just were breathing in the secondhand smoke. But it reduced your capillary blood flow by 50%. I thought to myself, oh my word, that is like horrific. Well, you can't afford to have poor blood flow. Just like when my vet buddy gave the older Beagle a shot of the drug to stop the heart. It took 4 minutes. That's because the blood flow was so poor and so slow that it took that long just to deliver the drug to the heart where the heart would stop. And so if you go to a doctor on Monday morning and you're curious about your blood flow, well, there's a few blood tests that you might want to consider. One of them is called homocysteine. Okay? If you've never had that test done, you might want to look into it, because it can tell a complete story of your capillary bed. Another one that I like very much is just measuring ferritin. So you've got homocysteine, ferritin, and uric acid. And I'll just kind of leave it at that. The other ones are found in what's called a CBC with a differential. Those are so easy to take a look at. I think the homocysteine might be the most expensive one to order as an add-on test, but totally worth it. And plus, you need to be as curious as possible about what your lab values say. Even if it's Greek to you, you might want to look them up. And so if a doctor or a nurse or a PA says that all your labs are fine, but you get a copy of them, and the ferritin level is at 450, which is way high, and your homocysteine is at 16.2, and your uric acid is 6.1, well, you might want to pay attention to that, because these are all factors that could greatly reduce the capillary circulation. And so let me give you another example. I've kind of been on the kick where I've studied inflammation that builds up around the knees, and let me tell you one of the things I've learned. I'm going to try to give you the short synopsis of it. When you're very young, you've got tremendous blood flow that goes to the cartilage of your knees. And I want to say it's around age somewhere between 22 and maybe 25 years of age, you still have a capillary bed that nourishes the cartilage of your knees. But that capillary bed goes away after that. So whatever the condition of your cartilage is, I'm just saying that's the best it's probably ever going to be. But they know now, any time that a person suffers from horrible arthritis, and so just, if you don't know what arthritis is, maybe you go to church with somebody, or maybe you have a family member or a friend or an aunt or an uncle or a grandparent, that when you look at their fingers, they've got these tremendous calcium deposits that's distorting and bending their fingers and making them crooked. Or if you go to the grocery store, which now would probably be a good time to go because there's probably very low traffic. But if you went to the grocery store and you noticed that a person was just limping and favoring their knee, or if somebody was favoring an ankle or a foot or a hip joint, and they were having a real hard time walking, well, you could probably say to yourself, I bet you that person has got like bone on bone in the knee. It looks like they're really in pain. And you know what? Thank goodness we have grocery stores that have those motorized carts. Because I've seen some people that have used those electric shopping carts. You know, the kind that you sit down and navigate. Some of those people, I'm telling you, they could not walk to the back of the store to get a stick of butter or to buy yogurt or to buy cream or anything that might be refrigerated toward the back side of the store. They couldn't do it if they had to. So with the electric shopping cart, at least they can get back there to get what they need. Now, I know what you're thinking, that if somebody has horrible arthritis, they're running toward the frozen fruit section so they can load up on frozen blueberries. No, that is not what I've seen. I think I told the story that about 3 weeks ago I was at the store, and I noticed there was a woman that was in the shopping cart, and obviously she had very severe arthritis. And when you have severe arthritis, that's maybe my point I'm trying to make, is you've got to assume that the joint itself is just not getting enough oxygen blood flow. And so we got to start thinking in terms of what are we going to do to improve blood flow to the joints so they can do their job, and that's healing. So the body doesn't gravitate toward disease. It gravitates toward health. Now, sometimes your body will go toward disease kicking and screaming. It'll tell you that something's wrong, but you've got to be willing to do your part. You've got to be willing to listen to it. And I get it. Sometimes you put things off because you just don't want to know. You're scared. I get that. But the only path through this is to increase blood flow and circulation. That's one of the most important keys. They even know now when a cardiologist does, you know how they will snake the catheter from the inguinal area of the human body, or sometimes they'll even go up the wrist if they can, but they're trying to snake the catheter toward the upper part of the heart so they can release a radioactive or a contrast dye where they can do a video x-ray of the heart and it shows it beating. But when they release the dye, they're trying to find out, does this individual have great blood flow through the coronary arteries? Well, what do you do if somebody has heart pain and chest pain and they're short of breath, but all the coronary arteries are wide open? There's no restriction. They don't have a 95% blockage or a 98% plaque formation that's cutting off the blood flow to that part of the heart that the coronary arteries are feeding. Well, now what they're calling it, there's another phenomenon that most, there was a study with 40,000 patients that had a dye job, or that dye diagnostic test where they could look at blood flow, and they noticed they've got this phenomenon that's called coronary slow flow, or the coronary slow flow phenomenon. It's actually got an abbreviated CSFP. So they're finding out now, even if your coronary arteries are wide open, they're showing that blood moves through them so slowly. It's just that when the doctors study these things, they don't really study the basic unit where all the action takes place. That's your microcirculatory capillary bed. It's at your capillaries. That's where you get all your oxygen. That's where you get all your nutrients. So as a person's capillary bed ages or becomes, what I should say is, as it becomes more damaged, what you have is the liver, all of a sudden, it cannot remove all the old oxidized cholesterol from the bloodstream. I really believe with all my heart this is really what's taking place in modern medicine today. And so if you do a lipid profile, and the doctor says your total cholesterol is 298 and your LDL is way too high, it's at 201, and your triglycerides are at 217. Well, all those are high numbers. And what if the high-density lipoprotein is down real low at 25? You're going, man, this is not looking good. And if your VLDL, that's very low density lipoprotein, anytime it's above 21, that kind of suggests that plaque and gunk is forming in your arteries at a faster rate than what your body can remove. So if all those are out of whack, what's happening is if you cannot deliver oxygen through the capillary bed to your liver cell, then guess what happens? It can't remove the cholesterol. So cholesterol just stays in circulation and builds up. And so what happens if you take a cholesterol-lowering drug, which I'm not telling you not to take a cholesterol-lowering drug. That's your decision. Just like if you get a vaccine for monkeypox, that's completely your choice and your call. Do whatever you feel like is best for you. It's your body. You're the steward of it. But if your physician says take a cholesterol-lowering drug, yeah, that can lower your cholesterol, but it doesn't do anything to repair the generous circulation of the liver. That's what you really need, is you need more oxygen and more nutrient delivery. But if the arteries are becoming damaged and they're not doing their job properly, and they become chronically inflamed and they become stiff, I mean, basically, that's the bottom line when it comes to aging, is your arteries become clogged up, they become stiff and hard, your blood pressure goes up. With what you really need is, what are you going to do to restore your circulation? Now, I have been trying to study which pharmaceutical drugs are great at restoring the capillary bed or the microcirculation. And I think maybe metformin might have a little bit of an action on that. I'm serious about that. So there may be a positive benefit to metformin. But really, everything that you want is going to be based on, you're going to get more oxygen, more blood flow, more circulation, more nutrient delivery, because when that happens, that's where you have healing that takes place. So if a person says, I have horrible arthritis of the knee or the hip, what do I do? Well, I mean, technically, you could say, well, have you heard of collagen? Have you heard of gelatin? Have you heard of glucosamine sulfate? Have you heard of chondroitin sulfate? There's even MSM. And then you can go through the whole range of different herbs like ginger and turmeric. But when you say those, I start thinking, wait just a second. Maybe the turmeric and maybe the ginger, those actually improve blood flow and circulation. Well, what if a person says, you know what, I like spicy foods? I think I read that article last week where it showed people that had the most spicy foods, they had the least diabetes, they had the least arthritis, they had the lowest level of heart disease, they had the lowest cancer. Just something to think about. Maybe there are flavonoid compounds that are actually found in spicy foods that are really good for your blood flow and circulation. So I'm not trying to make this a panacea, but in a roundabout way, I'm telling you that everything in your body is going to hinge on being able to deliver enough oxygen and nutrients. Now, there is a theory that is growing like crazy, and I'm telling you, I'm trying to read these articles because I find it so intriguing and so fascinating. But you've heard of a disease called Alzheimer's disease, haven't you? Okay. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. I don't want anybody that I know or love to have short-term memory loss, other cognitive deficits where they can't do the normal activities of living. You don't want that. But now they're saying that maybe one of the greatest predictors of all times is going to be heart disease. Now, let me read this to you right here. I got this from a book. I like this guy right here, Thomas R. Verney, M.D. The book is called The Embodied Mind. I'm on page 123. Listen to this right here for a second. A recent study from Denmark's Aarhus University Hospital takes us in a very unique direction. Their study involved 10,632 adults born between the years 18 and 90 and 1982. That's 100 years. Well, 102. Using medical registries and medical records from all Danish hospitals, they identified adults who were diagnosed between 1963 and 2012 with congenital heart disease, That's all they're doing here, folks. Who has congenital heart disease? Now, get this. These individuals, they had a 60% higher rate of dementia as compared to the general population. I don't know about you. That is pretty significant. 60% higher rate of dementia. They go on to say the risk was 160% higher in people with congenital heart disease and people younger than 55. Now, why should that be? Previous studies have linked negative emotions, including depression, anxiety, and anger, to a heightened risk of heart disease. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that when you're under severe stress, it is murder to the heart. That poor man that found out that his wife, the school teacher in Uvalde, was killed last week, died of a heart attack. I feel so bad for him. But you know that he had to endure just so much emotional pain, it just stopped his heart. When it comes to myocardial infarction, that's a heart attack, the medical term for a heart attack, I meant to say, evidence continues to accumulate that if a person develops a major depression following a heart attack, which is actually a rather common occurrence, they will be consistently threefold increased risk of death. Boy, there's a good reason right there to try to support people that had a heart attack with as much love and compassion, and if you want to say humor and positive stories, let's do it. What all this does is it shows is the extent to which the heart affects the brain and the rest of the body, and vice versa. According to new research from Rice University and Northwestern University, people who recently lost a spouse are more likely to have sleep disturbances that make them more vulnerable to develop inflammations, which in turn raises the risk to develop cardiovascular illness and death. This is just another example of the perfectly designed ecosystem our body represents. The moment one of these elements is changed, everything else is affected. So in other words, whatever affects the heart is going to affect the rest of the body. Now, listen to this. Dr. Verney goes on to say, he said, let's move from depression to schizophrenia for a moment. The leading cause of death among people suffering from schizophrenia, well, guess what it is? It's coronary artery disease. I'm going to cut to the chase right here. In the year 2007, there was a study done. The researcher, his name was Kubzanski, K-U-B-Z-A-N-S-K-Y, Kubzanski. I hope I didn't butcher it. What he did was, in 2007, he followed more than 6,000 men and women that were aged 25 to 74, and he only followed them for 10 years. I'm sorry, she followed them for 10 years, 20 years. She found that emotional vitality, which is a sense of enthusiasm, hopefulness, engagement in life, and the ability to face life stresses with emotional balance appeared to reduce the risk of coronary artery disease. She goes on to write that the protective effect was distinct and measurable, even when taking into account such wholesome behaviors such as not smoking and they regularly exercise. Well, you already know what I'm saying here. If you exercise, you're doing everything within your power to try to get your blood moving throughout your body. You tell me, who has the most oxygen in their brain or in their liver or their kidneys? The one that sits down all day long in front of a computer checking Facebook or playing video games, or the person that's out doing yard work and they're gardening and they're tending to their goats and their chickens and they're in their garden? Kubzanski has found that optimism cuts the risk of coronary heart disease in half. Isn't that amazing right there? That is just so phenomenal. Now, I want to give you something that's really, really good right here. And I've got so much research and information. This right here is just phenomenal. When they do CT scans of the brain, an MRI, 100% of all people age 85 and above, they have white matter lesions. That means there's injury to the vascular bed of the brain. And so what happens is, when you have poor capillary function, it's going to sabotage your brain over your lifetime. Let me cover some stuff that I think is good right here. Let me read this to you. And the reason why I'm reading this one is because you could actually go online or go to a health food store if you wanted to, and even if you don't, if blueberries are not in season, or what if they run out or the power goes out and they can't keep them frozen? They may have to cut the price on them to sell them fast so they won't spoil. But they took blueberry powder. And so, okay, let me see if I can find this. Oh, I know I'm kind of botching this. But anyway, there was one controlled clinical study involving 21 healthy men. And what they found was that blueberry polyphenols, the polyphenol is a part of the blueberry that improves blood flow. Okay. They showed with a significant increase at 1 to 2 hours and then for 6 hours after consumption. And all they gave them was blueberry powder. Okay. Here's another one. These things are so technical. I wish they would use simpler language, but here's the bottom line. They found that daily blueberry consumption, that was basically 22 grams of freeze-dried powder. That's not very much. Actually, I think 22 grams is just a little bit less than 1 ounce. So now we're talking much there. That would be the amount that you might stir into a cup of herbal tea. But when they had the 22 grams of the freeze-dried blueberry powder every day, that improved their blood pressure. Well, folks, the only way that you improve blood pressure, if you go from high back down to normal, is by improving the health of your arteries and your veins and your heart and your capillaries. That's basically the bottom line here. Anything that improves the health of your capillary bed, meaning you're able to deliver more oxygen and nutrients, that's what removes the stiffness from your arteries. And actually, I know this sounds simple, but the faster that blood flows through your arteries and capillaries, the cleaner it is. And so in this group of people over 8 weeks that took 22 grams of blueberry powder, they had improved blood pressure. Their plasma nitric oxide and arterial stiffness went down. And this was also in postmenopausal women, okay? Which literally, it's going to be postmenopausal women that have all the deadly heart attacks. I don't want that to happen. Here's another one right here. They took 51 people that had metabolic syndrome. That's basically pre-diabetic, almost a type 2 diabetic. This is what they did. They used 750 milligrams of black raspberry powder. That's not very much. That's like one big capsule of dried black raspberry powder. They gave it to them daily for 12 weeks. Guess what happened? It greatly decreased arterial stiffness. Now you tell me, do you want your arteries to be stiff and hard like rebar or concrete? No. How hard does the heart have to work to pump against that stiffness? A lot. You want your arteries being soft and supple and pliable and flexible and bendable? That's what you want. It said it decreased arterial stiffness significantly, and it increased circulating endothelial progenitor cells. I'm not really sure how to explain that to you. But basically, it greatly reduced overall cardiovascular risk. You see how much God loves you? He's given you black raspberries. He's given you blueberries. He's given you garlic. I think I've read so many studies about how garlic improves blood pressure and helps the lining of your arteries and cleans your blood. You're probably sick of me reading garlic studies. Here's one right here on ginkgo. Have you ever heard of an herb called ginkgo biloba? All right. This one right here has to do with the use of ginkgo in people that have problems with their retina. And like I began with this morning, the retina has just a tremendous demand for oxygen-rich blood and nutrition so your eyes can do their job. So if your eyesight is beginning to suffer a bit, or you're having some retinal problems, you might want to pay attention to this study on ginkgo. Because if you talk about ginkgo, you cannot overlook the term microcirculation. This is your capillary bed. This is where all the action takes place. That's why I'd rather talk about the capillaries and your microcirculation, because if we can improve that, you can basically improve every other aspect of your health. I'm just not aware of any pharmaceutical drugs that accomplish this. But when it comes to the things that are found in nature and God's creation, oh my goodness, you have got so many choices. I just told you about blueberries and black raspberry extract, and then garlic. I just overlooked the study on Go-To Cola. That was a good one also. But when it comes to the herb called ginkgo biloba, for example, improved retinal artery and capillary blood flow, they've been observed in people that have glaucoma, which I don't know if you know this or not, but the number one cause of blindness in North America is called macular degeneration. Well, here's the problem. If you cannot deliver enough oxygen and nutrients to the macula, your body has no choice. It's going to say, rats, what are we going to do here? So your body grows brand new arteries. The problem is, I'm not saying that growing arteries is always bad, but in this situation, it ain't good, because what happens is you grow brand new arteries directly on top of the macula, which means you lose your visual field. That part's not good. So this study right here on using ginkgo, they were able to actually improve the microcirculation. They got more oxygen through the capillaries to the retina in patients that had glaucoma. And they go on to say that since glaucoma results in poor blood flow to the retina, well, we should reverse that. So here's a study on the use of ginkgo biloba. Now, in an earlier research, a single dose of standardized ginkgo extract, and I think they said it was 112.5 milligrams. That's not really a lot. That would be like one small capsule or tablet. What was the result of the ginkgo extract? Well, there was a significant increase in blood flow in the nail capillaries of healthy volunteers. That's where they measured it, in the fingernails. If you look at the fingernails and you don't see lunas, those white lunas or moons, that's actually a sign that you're not getting enough oxygen blood flow. And so if you start taking care of yourself and you say, you know what, I'm going to write down on my list today, go for a walk, spend 30 minutes out in the garden, pulling weeds or chopping weeds with a hoe, but whatever you want to do. But the concept is to get your body moving. So, there's another one that I read on ginkgo, that they're showing improvements in red blood cells deformity. I don't know if you know this or not, but when a red blood cell squeezes through a capillary, it kind of almost has to fold over on itself just a little bit, almost like it's forming a taco shell. Think about a soft taco, not a hard one. But it almost has to fold over a little bit so it can squeeze through the capillary. But that's the study of, I think it's called red blood cell morphology, but you look at red blood cells under a microscope, sometimes your red blood cells, they don't look too good. They look like they're misshapen or they're malformed. But there was one study I came across that when they gave ginkgo biloba to individuals, all of a sudden their red blood cells started looking normal. They would fold easier. That means they're more supple and pliable and foldable and bendable. Isn't that amazing? Okay. Now this is the next topic right here. I'm trying to give you good stuff that you can use starting right now. Have you ever heard of grapeseed extract? Yeah. I'm sure most people have. If you haven't, just write down grapeseed extract. Because here's a study right here. 100 milligrams a day of OPCs, I think that stands for oligomeric proanthocyanidines. I know, it comes from grapeseed. So if you just look up grapeseed extract, what they did was they gave 100 milligrams to, it was administered to elderly patients. This was not given to 3-year-olds or 4-year-olds. It was probably given to 80-year-olds. All right? 100 milligrams. But they gave them to elderly people that had capillary fragility. What does that mean to you? That means you barely bump into a piece of furniture and you have a purple blotch. Or you have a lot of broken veins on your leg. Or it looks like you have pooling blood in the small veins. Sometimes they call them spider veins. You know what I mean. So they gave 100 milligrams of grape seed. Here's the results. It says very good results were achieved in 67% of the patients. They had good results in 17% and moderate in 13%. More recently, grape seed extract, which is what we're talking about, at 133 milligrams a day for 14 days, reduce leg swelling in healthy women during prolonged sitting. Folks, you can bet your bottom dollar if you have fluid in your legs, your circulation is breaking down. Isn't this interesting right here? They gave women that had lots of swelling in their legs 133 milligrams of grapeseed extract, and it reduced the swelling. That's called repair, 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 healing, 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 rejuvenation. Here's another one right here. When they gave grape seed to people that had high blood pressure, they gave them 300 milligrams a day for 4 weeks. Guess what it did? There was a significant decrease in the systolic blood pressure. That's the top number. So if your blood pressure is 170, over 80, well, that top number is a little bit high. Bottom number, the diastolic, 80 is pretty good. Actually, 80 is great. But when that top number is at 170, not great. Okay. Now, this one gets me right here. They gave grape seed extract therapy. It was 150 milligrams a day in the study for 1 year. And what happened? It improved the hard exudates in patients with non-proliferative diabetic retinopathy. That means the chunk of hard, gunky debris that builds up in the retina. So they had to give it time. You got to remember, the three universal healers are time, patience, and consistency. You can't take grapeseed extract just for one day and expect a miracle. But what you're setting your mind to is, what can you do to improve the microvasculature and the circulation? How can you actually help your capillary bed to do its job? And that's to deliver oxygen and nutrition to your cells. I think you have to look at this much differently than maybe what you've done before. If you have high blood pressure, that's capillary damage. If you have dementia, that's capillary damage. If you have arthritis, if you've got pain, if you've got cancer, all that says you're not getting enough blood flow and oxygen. Okay. Here's another one. This one's a horrible topic. I can tell you right now, you're not going to like it. But it's my job to deliver the truth. The very best thing that I can do for you this morning is tell you the truth. This one's going to be hard to take, but you're going to have to suck it up and take it. Okay. There are several studies that suggestive of the positive effect of chocolate, or if you want to call it cocoa, on the microcirculation and the endothelium. That's the inner lining of your capillaries. All we're doing is trying to increase blood flow, oxygen delivery, and we want your arteries and capillaries being pliable and supple. I just made that term up. Supple and flexible. I tried to combine two words. And what they did was, in one clinical trial, the impairment of endothelial function was caused by a glucose challenge. That means when they gave them a boatload of sugar, blood flow was a heck of a lot worse. But when they gave him dark chocolate, it worked great to improve blood flow. Now, they used white chocolate also. Guess what? White chocolate does not work. Only dark chocolate. You got to get that good cacao stuff. Here's one right here. A randomized controlled trial in 60 healthy volunteers found that 10 grams of dark chocolate, which 10 grams, it's not that much. I think, what is it, 28 grams equals an ounce. So we're talking about maybe a third of an ounce of chocolate. That'd be like a square or two on a chocolate bar. But in this study, they were rated at 75% cacao. A Hershey's Kiss is not 75% cacao. So what they did was they took 10 grams of dark chocolate, 75% cacao, for 1 month, and it improved the pulse wave velocity. The arterial stiffness started to go away. That's incredible. Now get this one right here. A double-blind randomized controlled trial of 20 sedentary people. You know what it means to be sedentary? That means people are sitting down all day long, they're not really moving their body. They gave them 20 grams of the epicatechin-rich dark chocolate daily for 3 months, and it all increased their exercise capacity, their VO2 max output, and their maximum work in watts. So they could actually measure how much they could work just by eating chocolate, which may have resulted from increased skeletal muscle mitochondrial efficiency. Now, that's kind of a weird thing to say, but what that means is eating the dark chocolate resulted in they were able to get more oxygen and more fuel to the mitochondria so your body could actually produce more energy. Now, I kind of have my own working theory here, but I always think that if a person has more energy and they feel better, then they just naturally want to get up and be about doing their projects or the work they have in front of them. Or if they haven't cleaned the cobwebs from their bedroom ceiling in the last 15 years and all of a sudden they're cleaning them, that's a pretty good indication that they're doing better. And really, that's the key, folks. You've got to increase blood flow and circulation. There's no other way through this, okay? Habitual cocoa or chocolate consumption decreased arterial stiffness in a randomized parallel group study conducted on 26 postmenopausal women. That's who this study's for, postmenopausal women and chocolate. They ingested 17 grams of chocolate or cocoa once a day over 12 weeks. And you know what? They had better blood flow. Okay? I just looked at the clock. I've been going at this for a while now. If you'd like to join me on the radio and ask a question or make a comment, please feel free to do so. The number at the station is 903-586-5257. That's 903-586-5257. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for turning your radio off.
Yes. Couldn't get to it soon enough.
That's all right.
My daughter has something called C-A-L-C-I-F-I-C. T-E-N-D-O-N-O-P-A-T-H-Y.
I got the last part, tendinopathy. What was the first part?
C-A-L-C-I-F-I-C.
Oh, calcific tendinopathy. Can I tell you what that means? Do you know what calcium is?
Yes.
Okay, so for example, if you eat salmon or you have some Swiss cheese or kale or broccoli, all that has great amounts of calcium in it. And what's supposed to happen is calcium is supposed to go to where it belongs. It belongs in the bones and the teeth. It does not belong in the tendons. And so as this is the rule that I operate by, any structure or tissue in the body that stays chronically inflamed for a long period of time, guess what's going to happen to it? Your body is going to calcify it.
Okay.
And so that's what's happened. So she's got a tendon or tendons in her body that have turned to stone, basically. Does that make sense?
Oh.
Well, does she have a lot of pain with this?
Oh, yes.
Where is it, in her shoulder or where?
Her left shoulder.
Left shoulder. Let me tell you what I want her to prayerfully, thoughtfully consider. There is an element that's found in nature that's known as phosphorus. One of the products that I like to use in situations like this is called liquid phosphood. It's basically just a liquid form of phosphorus. When you take it out of the dropper, it looks like it's about as yellow as humanly possible. And if you had a white silk shirt on and dropped the liquid phosphorus on your shirt, you're not getting the yellow stain out, baby. It's going to be stuck.
Yeah, like mustard, huh?
Yeah, well, sort of like that, yeah. It's just more of a clear yellow, but it's just a strong, it's very potent. But usually what I would do as a simple experiment with her is I would give her liquid phosphorus and at the same time just take the juice of a lemon, a fresh lemon, and apply the juice directly to the area where she has severe pain and do that about 5 or 6 times a day for about 3 weeks. She's literally got nothing to lose. Now, what I do sometimes, I'll take my rubber mallet and my chisel, and I'll whack the shoulder pretty hard. I'm sort of joking. It's not as bad, not as bad as I'm saying, but you got to break up that calcification, and sometimes you can do it really easily where they can start to move their shoulder again. But if she were to take about 30 drops of phosphate in a glass of water twice a day, then we can see if this starts to get better. But what she may have is, when you have a calcified tendon, there's actually a couple of vitamins and minerals. Let me just cover them. There's a essential vitamin for life called vitamin K2. Sometimes it's called minoquinone 4 or minoquinone 7, but I just call it K2, vitamin K2.
Okay.
And if a woman is low in K2, she's going to be more prone to having what's called calcific tendonitis or tendinopathy.
Okay.
The tendinopathy, the tendon is what attaches your muscle to the bone. So if she raises her left arm above her head to touch the ceiling, those are what move the bone. It's the tendons and the muscles. So she might be low in K2. The other thing that I think of is, I think of magnesium.
She's taking magnesium, but it's kind of a low dose, I'm thinking. It's like 400 milligrams.
Well, I think I read on the radio like a week or two ago about the study from women that had horrible, horrible bone pain, and your daughter might actually qualify for this. I want to say it came from Czechoslovakia, but what they did was they gave magnesium lactate, and I want to say they delivered 800 milligrams a day. Actually, let me rethink that. Can I just go with 800 milligrams of magnesium lactate? But what they did was they were trying to get the women out of severe bone pain. And it had a very high level of success. Because when you're lacking enough magnesium, that's when calcium starts to build up in locations where it doesn't belong. So could you imagine what this would be like if she formed a kidney stone made of calcium? That'd be horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Who wants calcium oxalate building up in the kidneys, forming a stone that looks like a grass burr? But she's got one in this tendon, most likely of her rotator cuff.
Not sure.
So, lemon juice, liquid phosphorus, magnesium, vitamin K2. Those would be all things. Sometimes I'll use extra virgin olive oil and just let the skin drink it up. If you get the unfiltered olive oil, it should have a higher concentration of a substance called chlorophyll. And chlorophyll is just like one of the most amazing substances in the universe. And so if she could at least try these things for about 3 weeks, see if she's not a whole lot better. But what we have to do is we have to break up all those calcified adhesions. That's a little bit painful, but it's worth it.
Okay, she's going to have to insist on using that arm?
Yep. There's no way around it, because you've heard the principle, if you don't use it, you lose it.
Right.
I'm not trying to be negative, it's just the way it is.
Well, I know.
And of course, as the mama, you know what's best for your daughter.
Okay.
Do you know what the most impressive story that I've heard this entire week is? I'm just totally amazed by this story. When I saw the news piece on YouTube, it was done by CBS News. It was a woman that heard that there was a school shooter in Uvalde, and she said she drove over 100 miles an hour. She's just a field worker. I should say she's an incredible mother, but she ran out of the field from picking the crops, and she drove over 100 miles an hour to the school at Uvalde. She was met at the outer perimeter by police officers saying, ma'am, you can't go in there. She says, I'm going in there to rescue my kids right now. And they told her, ma'am, you're being very uncooperative. We're going to have to arrest you. She said, well, give me a badge or give me a gun. Let me go in there. You're not doing anything. You gotta go onto YouTube and just type in mother who rescues her son and daughter in Uvalde. It's an incredible story. So they arrested her. And then after a while, they said, why is this woman in handcuffs? And somebody ordered the police officers to cut her loose. Guess what she did as soon as she was out of the cuffs?
She went in.
She did. Have you heard the story?
No.
I'm telling you, she made a break for it. They couldn't catch her. She ran right into the school, and she went to, I think, a classroom, and the teacher said, where are the police? She said, they're out there trying to catch me. So and I thought to myself, but she rescued her son and daughter.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? You know what the police told her? They said, don't tell this to anybody or you're going to be in big trouble. I just can't even believe that story. But just watch it for yourself. Go on to YouTube or it's CBS. Just type in CBS news piece. It's about 9 minutes long. It's incredible. Now, that impresses me. That is some kind of courage and bravery right there. But I bet you anything, you're the type of mother that would have done that, too, for your daughter. I can see you sprinting across the room to get to your daughter to save her. You would do that. Yeah, but your daughter's going to have to face the music on this deal. We're going to have to start doing shoulder exercises to break up all those calcified adhesions.
Okay.
All right. I hope I've given you some really good advice today.
Can she just get something like a weight to put around her wrist and do that, or just...
Well, there's one exercise called the Codman's exercises, like Codman, C-O-D-M-A-N. She can look those up on YouTube. And I always just use a stick, and I do what are called figure eights. So she might type in broom handle, figure eight, shoulder exercises. The thing of it is, she can go to YouTube right now and type in, what I do for severe shoulder pain. She's going to have a million videos pop up that demonstrate and show her how to start the process of taking care of her shoulder.
Right.
So this is straightforward. Have her do that.
Okay. Okay.
All righty.
Thank you very much. Have
yes,
a blessed day.
Yes, thank you so much for your phone call.
Bye.
Thank you. Thank you again. I know I get distracted, but, you know, whatever I think about is what I talk about. And hopefully it's enough health stuff that everybody can extract something good from it and take it and put it into action. And the thing of it is, if you do these things that I'm talking about, you win. You benefit. You're the one that's blessed. I really do think that woman that I just told you about, that is literally one of the most incredible things that I've heard this last week. I'm just so thankful to hear her story. I pray that somebody will start a GoFundMe page to raise money for the poor woman. She didn't, you know what? She didn't complain about her lot in life. All she did was just state the facts about how she had to go in and rescue her own children. And so there it is. The truth is the truth. Take it as you will. Some people aren't going to like this, and some people are going to like it. You do what you want with it. You know what? The most valuable thing that you can do is just make your own mind up, make your own decisions. But as for me, that is one gutsy woman. I've already forgotten her name, and I'm so sorry. I'm going to look it up. But I'm so thankful to God for women like her. Talk about a good mother. I mean, that's just an amazing story. Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed being here today. Lord willing, I will be here this time next week. In the meantime, may the Lord bless you and keep you.